This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. One of the nation's largest banks, Wells Fargo, has been fined a whopping $185 million in fines by the federal government, including the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. Its crime? Illegal banking practices that involved opening credit card and bank accounts for millions of people who didn't authorize them. In addition to the fine, Wells Fargo is refunding $2.6 million in fees to customers. The bank, which has 40 million customers nationwide, has fired more than 5,000 of its employees over the scandal. But Wells Fargo staff was heavily incentivized and pressured into pushing the illegal practices. There are no reports of any senior staff being fired as yet. Many customers who found they had accounts they did not authorize were slapped with fees that then multiplied when they didn't pay them. One man who is suing the bank says his credit score suffered as a result. My guest is Doug Henwood. He's a political economist and editor of Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy, as well as My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets a Presidency. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first of all, how do you explain these kinds of practices by Wells Fargo? Is it that, as far as you can tell, that basically the staff, the employees of this bank were given so much incentive and even really pressured to sell multiple accounts to and multiple services to customers that many of these employees did it without simply informing the customers?
Well, it's remarkably large scale. If they fired over 5,000, you know, you really have to wonder how many more were involved and didn't get fired. But it went on for quite a while. Millions of people, millions of accounts involved, what, 1.5 million checking accounts, 500,000 credit card accounts. And I think it's a combination of perverse incentives, as they say in the trade, plus an absolute lack of management supervision. You would think that, you know, senior management might take a hit on this. But, you know, that's the way these American scandals work. Some low-level people are sacrificed, and the CEOs continue with their power and bonuses unabated. It seems like classic Americanism. What's one thing that's striking about this is that Wells Fargo is mostly a consumer bank. It's not Goldman Sachs, which, you know, deals with the high end of the financial markets. It's deals with regular people, and it got through the financial crisis pretty well with minimal damage and minimal scandal. But now it's showing that banks like that can, too, play all kinds of nasty games.
And in fact, it is well known for so-called cross-selling. It's the kind of thing, you know, you go to, I don't know, you go to McDonald's and they ask if you want to supersize what you're getting, or if you get fries, they ask you if you want something else. So Wells Fargo is basically apparently very famous for being the kind of company that if you want to open an account, their employees are sort of pressured or encouraged to ask you, well, while you're here opening an account, would you then like X, Y, and Z? Is this, you think, also something that has fed into this?
Oh, definitely. I read that even that some of the tellers were involved. You know, you normally don't get a sales pitch from a teller. Although I can't remember the last time I dealt with a teller. But, you know, they were not known for being aggressive salespeople, but they would urge customers who are, I don't know, depositing a check or something, or doing some kind of business where you needed a teller, to go see a banking officer and, you know, get some more products, as they say. Aggressive cross-selling, probably the whole culture pervaded, the whole bank. And this is one of, you know, an extreme case of what that results in. But I'm sure, you know, even short of that kind of deception, and what really seems criminal, there are a whole lot of high-pressure tactics being used to sell things to people that they don't really need. And it's sort of not what banks are supposed to be about.
And media is reporting that apparently a lot of customers, would certainly, if they discovered, if they were keeping close track of their accounts, they might discover that, where did this charge come from? Or I didn't ask this to open it, and contact the bank and clear it up, if you will. But of course, a majority of people don't necessarily keep track of their finances so carefully. They're busy, they're working several jobs, and all of a sudden they find that they're being being charged the fees, and when they don't pay the fees, they're then multiplying, and then all of a sudden their credit score is suffering. How do we know? And then your credit score impacts all sorts of things, your ability to buy a house, a car, or open a credit card you really need. How do we measure the impact that these practices have had on millions of customers?
Well, I don't know about the rest of the country, but it's getting harder to rent an apartment in New York City without a good credit score too. So even finding a place to live, if you're even short of a mortgage, just renting an apartment could be a challenge with a bad credit score. We just don't know. And I was very interested to see that Dan Turillo, who is on the Federal Reserve Board, and his specialty is regulation. And as far as these things go, he's not a bad guy. I used to see him moderating Council on Foreign Relation economic events, and he's a pretty decent fellow as far as these sort of things go. He expressed concern that Wells Fargo might be getting off too lightly. So maybe that's, we haven't heard the last of it. If the Federal Reserve is annoyed, they have enormous powers of investigation and supervision. So maybe the story is not over yet, but I'm sure there's damage, you know, lots of people's lives. And as you point out, you know, an awful lot of people don't really scrutinize their bank statements. I'm sure there are some people who, you know, balance their checkbooks carefully. My parents did that all the time. I don't do that. And a lot of people, just not merely, not just a matter of not having the time, but a lot of people have kind of a mental block when it comes to finances. They find it obscure or intimidating, and banks can take great advantage of that because people really can't understand what a lot of those numbers mean. And, you know, we think, oh, okay, maybe I did agree to that. I don't know. So I'm sure people got taken advantage of.
And, I mean, is it really the fault of these 5,300 employees who were fired? The bank apparently pressured them, evaluated them, and paid them based on how many of these extra accounts and services they could sell to customers.
No, of course. Everybody is, I suppose, culpable in some sense for unethical or criminal behavior. I mean, we can't take the, you know, I was only following orders defense too far. But on the other hand, you know.
Well, they might have been fired for not selling enough accounts. Or, so you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right, the whole compensation structure. The whole structure of the bank was set up to encourage this sort of thing. So if you set this sort of thing up, you shouldn't be shocked when you get this kind of outcome. People are always going to push things hard when their income depends upon it. I'd really love to know more details about the exact structure of this compensation, who got paid what, how much the bank paid altogether in this, and you know what they're doing to prevent any recurrences in the future. I noticed Wells took out the big newspaper ads today, apologizing, sort of. It was not they were not genuflecting and begging forgiveness, but you do have to wonder how they've changed. It seems as Turillo, the Federal Reserve guy I mentioned earlier, said also in his comments that it's proof that the banking system has not gotten over the unethical practices that came to light in the 2008 financial crisis. Some things have gotten better, but obviously some things haven't.
And even the Business Insider likened the pressure on Wells Fargo staff as part of the perils of performance pay. Now, what about let's talk about the fact that the bank is being held somewhat accountable. A part of that $185 million fine, $100 million of it is from the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. It's the biggest fine that this particular bureau has ever asked anyone to pay. This is, of course, the bureau that Elizabeth Warren famously started. Now Richard Cordray heads it. Does this bode well, this sort of action bode well for the bureau?
Well, it would bode well for consumers, and it would bode well for the board's future actions. But you do have to wonder whether this is going to excite a lot of resentment among the financial world, and also among the politicians who work for them, who are going to press to have it defunded or have its mandate limited or whatever. The Republicans, and I'm sure a lot of finance-friendly Democrats as well, and certainly a lot of Wall Street types would like to see that thing go away. And as good as this sounds, and it was very good that they actually put an end to this and levied a nine-figure fine on them. That's good news. But I hope this doesn't excite any opposition to the to the bureau, which is unabashedly a good thing.
Right. I mean, if the bureau actually exercises its power, it stands to be crushed by pro-Wall Street lawmakers. But if it sits and does nothing, consumers do suffer. Now, what about the size of the overall fine? $185 million overall that Wells Fargo has to pay. It's paying back $2.5 million to customers. Does this really impact Wells Fargo's bottom line? Or is this, as most corporations view these things, simply the cost of doing business?
Yeah, I wish I'd done the math on, you know, what how many hours of profit this is for Wells Fargo. But my guess is that the bank will have no trouble paying for this. It will probably be a tax deduction. And whether that's true or not, the $185 million for a bank the size of Wells Fargo is, you know, like for us paying a $25 fine. It's really not, it's not going to be a burden to them in any way. And one has to keep, you know, a careful eye on them if they're going to repeat this sort of thing. And you have to wonder if other banks are doing the same thing. You know, Wells is a consumer bank and noted for these aggressive cross-selling practices. You know, I have to say, I almost feel neglected. My bank has not tried to do this to me. I wonder if other banks are doing the same thing.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, I'm not a Wells Fargo customer, but I, you know, among the practices that are pointed out is that people who were sort of marked as having been pre-approved for credit cards would simply get them in the mail. Here is a credit card that we've decided you can have, and unless you call and actively cancel that credit card, it's now yours, whether you asked for it or not. And I've had that from other banks, and I'm sure lots of people have been simply sent pre-approved credit cards from banks other than Wells Fargo, and it certainly remains to be seen whether these will be also targeted. On the back to the issue of cost of doing business, Doug, when it came, you know, in 2008, when the shenanigans by financial companies came to light and banks came to light, any thought of fining them so hard that it would hit them where it hurt was countered with, well, they're too big to fail. They're such a big part of the economy. They're too big to fail. So we have to bail them out and sort of fine them out. If Wells Fargo, as you said, is primarily a customer bank, not really as deeply enmeshed in the details of the economy, couldn't a really large fine that really hit them where it hurts actually incentivize them to start being a real bank?
Well, one would hope. It's hard to imagine the government under present circumstances doing anything like that. But it would also be nice to see senior management take a hit now and
right.
then, too. Not just, you know, a fine which a bank like Wells can easily pay, but also to see some people lose their jobs or, you know, even in,
lose their Christmas bonuses.
Yeah, well, or in some cases, I'm sure there are criminal activities involved. And, you know, it's small-time people are always getting prosecuted for the most minor offenses in this crazy carceral society. But once you reach a certain level, it seems that you're exempt from the eyes of the police. And that just doesn't seem fair in a class sense.
Right. It remains to be seen if Wells Fargo will hold any of its upper management accountable. But it really shouldn't just be up to Wells Fargo either. It would be nice if the government, as part of its fines, actually prosecuted high-level people for pushing such practices.
And the government has enormous powers over banks in particular.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, you know, they do have, in theory, there's great legal freedom to get involved and punish banks or tell them what they can and can't do. The Federal Reserve in particular has a tremendous power to just basically tell banks what they can and can't do. Since no bank in its right mind would ever want to alienate the Federal Reserve, because if they ever get in trouble, they might need the Federal Reserve to rescue them. So the Fed, maybe Tarullo is suggesting that the Fed will do something. But the government really has enormous powers. When you look at something like an oil spill, there's no direct pressure the government would have on an oil company that's comparable to the direct pressure that the government has on banks.
Doug, finally, I want to focus on the sort of cultural impact of this sort of news. When I saw the headlines about Wells Fargo, my immediate reaction was, I'm not surprised. you know, this is what banks do. And it really feels like we're in this moment today when there's such widespread distrust of big corporations, of banks. People almost accept the fact that banks will be criminal and get away with whatever they can. You know, the Occupy Wall Street movement kicked this off. The Bernie Sanders campaign has really picked up on this. And then yet at the end of it all, we're left with the two least popular candidates running for election, neither of whom can really be trusted to hold banks accountable. And it just feels like the simmering public, you know, anger against banks for these kinds of criminal activities continues to rise with no real, you know, vent or pressure release. People are just getting angrier and angrier.
Yeah, although I guess, you know, people also, there's also the reaction of just shrugging your shoulders and say, more of the same. What are you going to do about it? You can't fight City Hall or
right, it
banks.
Feeds apathy. Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. Marx quotes a 19th century Scottish banker in Capital, I think his name is Bell, as saying banks are like moral and religious institutions. And he has this hymn to the moral uplift that a banker can have on his customers. That's just, I mean, of course, that was nonsense. Banks were shady then as they are now. But there's just absolutely no pretense to that kind of rectitude that you used to hear, that used to surround banks, that kind of, you know, Calvinist righteousness in the 19th century, or J.P. Morgan talking about character. And, you know, these guys, of course, were shady in practice. But, you know, even all pretense of that kind of moral rectitude of the 19th century banker has been blown apart. And they all just seem like a bunch of con artists now.
And, you know, also focusing on some of the, let's focus on Hillary Clinton. You wrote a book about her, My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. How much money does she receive from Wall Street firms and banks?
Oh, enormous amounts. I mean, I can't remember the numbers over the years, but the Clintons together have raised something like $2 billion over the last decade from business. And the largest sector that's contributed to them has been finance. They're very, very deeply tied to finance. You know, Hillary raised $130 million in the month of August. That was, I'm sorry, I think it's more like $30 million in the month of August. Well, I can't remember the number exactly, but it was $150,000 an hour is the number that sticks in my head. And that is what much of that was gathered from financiers out in their Hamptons houses. That's her natural habitat these days, is hanging out with big-time financiers, also tech people, but finance is the biggest on the list of contributors. So it's really very hard to believe that she's going to do anything substantial to crack down on them.
Right, there we go. Well, Doug, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your insight. Where's the best place for people to read your writings?
I'd be loving if people would read My Turn, which is available in all the usual outlets from Seven Stories Press.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you.
Doug Henwood is a political economist, editor of the Left Business Observer, author of After the New Economy. His latest is My Turn, Hillary Clinton Targets the Presidency. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. You can find all our interviews on risingupwithsonali.com, as well as subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.